located in Escondido, near San Diego, California. I'd like to welcome you to the Bakken Amateur Radio Society System Fusion Net. This net operates on the Minnesota-Wisconsin room in WIS 21493. It's an open technical net, but please check in through net control. And so far tonight, your net control stations are myself and Otis, W4IOD, and we may see someone else before things are over, but we'll see. Bakken Amateur Radio Society takes its name from Earl Bakken. He is the founder of Medtronic. Earl was always interested in radio and is the founding sponsor of the Pavlik Museum of Broadcasting. If you're ever in the Minneapolis area, you got to see that. Earl allows us to use his name because he's a strong supporter of learning, experimentation, and helping others. You can learn more about Mars and Earl at W0MDT.com. I'd like to remind you that there is a chat window available at hamoperator.com. Your net control stations do monitor that, so it's a way of letting you know, letting them know, letting us know what you think of us. And you just go to hamoperator.com, select MinWiz, and then MinWiz chat. We have a net procedure. Check-ins will work like this. We'll ask you for check-ins, and if you would kindly reply with your call, city, state, and assume you have traffic, we'll acknowledge the call, and then we'll get back to you, and when we turn it back to you, you can speak what's on your mind. We have a couple things going on tonight, some interesting information. So you will, at some point, want to scurry over to hamoperator.com, because we'll be talking about a couple things that are located there. With that, is there anybody have announcements for the net? Please come now. Not hearing any announcements. We'll start off with the thing, and I think Odie, do you have an announcement?
Hey, K9EQW4OD. Good evening, Chris and everyone else on the net. Yes, I have a few announcements. We'll run through. It's more informational than anything, but just remember the folks over at Yaesu are running specials on some of their radios. Some of them are Fusion applicable, some of them are not, but that runs through October 1st through the end of this month, November the 30th, and the FTDX 101MP, they're giving you $100 off. The FTDX 101D, they're giving you $50 off. The FTM 600, $40 off. We get to our first Fusion radio, and the only one they're offering a discount on, the FT5DR, is $20 off. And the DR2X repeater program is still ongoing through the end of the year, December 31st, 2022. The DR2X without the LAN unit is $700, and with the LAN unit, it's $900. And since we're speaking about Yaesu, they're implementing new labor rates effective December 1st, 2022. That will be new non-warranty claims. So if you have a radio that isn't under warranty, it's not covered by warranty, and you have to pay the labor rates, you might want to get it in before December 1st. The rates go up to $90 per hour, plus parts and shipping, so that could be an issue for some folks. Let me let the system reset. And this is W4IOD returning. Just to bring it up, because we are speaking about Yaesu at this point in time. Their preferred social media communications, I've noticed that the official Yaesu Facebook pages for not only the official Yaesu, but the Fusion, the DR1, the DR2X, all of them are unavailable. Don't know the story behind that, and checking their YouTube page, it looks like the last update's been 4 or 5 months ago, so I don't know the story behind that, don't have the information, but I was going to let folks know you used to be able to go over there and actually interact with them, although it would be a censored conversation if they chose to allow it, but now it's vanished. So that venue as far as social media is no longer available. Don't know the story behind that, but I haven't seen or spoken with John Crook, N9UPC, to find out what the deal is with that. Chris, that's pretty much all I've got as far as announcements. Might have some comments later, but W4IOD, back to Net Control.
Okay, Odie, well, that's interesting. I am I'm over here poking around on Facebook. You sure Zuckerberg just didn't run out of money to pay the electric bill? The web pages are, so Yaesu USA official. I don't say official at the end of them. Yaesu DR2 blah 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 official. Yaesu System Fusion official are all coming up for me. But they are lacking any sort of activity for the last week. So since they are moderated, it might be that the moderator is off doing other things. So since you mentioned Facebook, Al mentioned the Facebook page that you can talk about things on, and that one is called Yaesu System Fusion Users. That is a public group. So that's the one you want to look for, is Yaesu System Fusion Users. And then over on groups.io, I don't have it in front of me, there's a pretty good group over there, which is also you know, I wonder if they might be moving to groups.io, because a lot of companies have gotten a little annoyed with Facebook for a number of reasons, their lack of control and the fact that their stuff can be posted right alongside ads that are not very pleasant to have your stuff located next to. Anyway, so they are coming out, but nothing's been posted for a week or more on any of those. All right. Well, we'll open things for general check-in and see what people might have to say or questions they might have. Otis is saying, "Oh, maybe they blocked me." Otis has been known to be have opinions, but hey, just trying to make it all better. So anyway, anybody else, anybody out there, questions, comments, that sort of thing for the net, please call K9EQ.
Okay, five, Juliet, Papa, down under.
Victor Oscar 1, Alpha X-ray, Mike in St. John's, Newfoundland, Canada. Victor Ocean 1, Alpha X-ray.
Kilo Delta 9 Golf Victor Sierra KD9 GDS Rick in Wisconsin with a question.
Okay, we'll call it there. We've got KD9 GVS Rick in Wisconsin. We got VO1AX Michael up over the north, Canada, and down under, we have Pete, VK5JP. So, what's happening down under, Pete?
Hey, good evening, Chris, and all other listeners there on the other side of the planet. just with the follow-up on the issue with the room problem, and that I sent you the email, Chris, and you've got the photos, so you can post those if you want to in hamoperator.com. After some sleepless nights of investigation, we actually found the cause of why the room was affected and not that of the node, and that on the South Coast repeater. This was with the issue with the HRI. We were sort of going through everything, the computers and so forth. Well, the issue actually ended up being a data cable, of all things. And you would say, well, why? And that, well, this was a flat ribbon data cable. It's constructed differently to your normal ones, and they had no shielding. And for whatever the reason, it was affecting the room control and the room voice. Once we replaced it with a shielded cable, problem went away. So there it is. And that had we started at the at the right end instead of the wrong end, we would have saved ourselves a bit of grief. But anyway, for whatever the reason, the cable did work for a short period of time, and then something had caused it to play up. Replacing the cable fixed all the problems. Anyway, back to you there, Chris, and Net Control, and that's K90Q, VK5JP.
Okay, well, thank you there, Pete, for that follow-up. Boy, that had a lot of people scratching their heads. Like, oh, it's got to be magic. Well, there's a lesson for you. Always check the data cable. Power supplies, cables, connectors, all of them. Always problematic. But thanks for that, that update, Pete. And we have another Pete that joined us with Net Control. 80MI is logged in. All right, we talked to Down Under. Let's hear from Up Over, VO1AX. Michael, what's happening in Canada?
Well, very good evening, Chris. 89EQ with the net. And good evening to everybody on board this evening. Up here in St. John's, Newfoundland, Canada, about 1,500 miles or so northeast of Maine. We've got some wind happening, not too bad of wind, about 35, 40 miles an hour. And some slop, I like to call it. It's kind of rain, sleet, snow mix. Just more or less a beautiful night to stay in and play radio. Hi. New to the WiresX world, I'm running, as there's not much WiresX activity up here in Newfoundland, Canada, I'm running an FTM200DR with the SCU58 connecting kit to a laptop, so hopefully it's not terrible and ripping your eardrums out, Chris. Well, just listen along. Wanted to introduce myself. Name is Michael, and I've been exploring different rooms the last couple of weeks just to gauge the activity. Making a few bookmarks, so hopefully I'll be I'll add this one to my list as well and follow along with the activity. Well, just listen along for the net while I'm doing some other things about the kitchen here. 73 all around, and thanks for calling me in. Back to you, Chris.
All right, well, thank you for that information, Michael. Glad to have you along, and your FTM 200 sounding pretty good. And just looking at your QRZ page, and most of you have a Mosley Classic 33. You're talking about Mosley today with the KE0YJJ, and that sort of thing. So it's kind of nice. The great picture, by the way, of the tower, the antenna, of course. In the eye of the beholder, I think you'll agree. And I should mention for those that are out there that aren't familiar with QRZ.com, although I think most people are, it's a good idea to put something up there. At least make sure your email address works or you have something up there in case, you know, somebody needs to get a hold of you because the transmitter's stuck on or who knows what. So QRZ.com, it's pretty automatic for me here. I just, when the station transmits, I just click on a button and there's their QRZ page, so it's kind of easy to do. But, you're welcome to hang out here. We appreciate the company. Things can be pretty quiet at times, and so, you know, we need people to speak up and, you know, rattle the electrons and things like that. And this is a room that does, it's Minnesota, Wisconsin, right? But hey, we're all part of a big family, so everybody's welcome. All right, taking care of Michael there, I think. Over to Rick, over in Wisconsin, KD9GVS from K9EQ.
All right, Chris, good evening to you and everybody on the net. So my question entails the Yaesu website as well, specifically the member registration page where you you apply for your you register a radio or the HRI 200 and apply for an ID. So what I'm wanting to do is send in for a registration for an HRI 200 for a repeater we're putting on the air down here, and of course I already have my call sign registered for my PDN here, so I guess my question is, you know, is there any issue with, of course, then using the same call sign, I want to register the HRI 200 I have setting here to get a room going for our local repeater here. So that's the question. Assume that you're registering a different device. I'm assuming you use the same call sign and the same personal information there. Thanks, Chris. KD9GVS, back to the net.
Okay, very good, Rick. Well, I'll mention a couple things on how that works, because some of it is not completely clear. And by the way, I went to the web page because of your comments there. I see the notes. I was wondering where Otis got that information about the $90 an hour. This just isn't fair. If we were marine radios, it'd only be $75 an hour instead of $90. I guess marine radios are easier to fix, or maybe they don't need the top end techs. Maybe that's it. We in ham radio get the top end techs. All right. So first thing is that you can do more than one registration, and once you have the software registered, so like with your PDN, you've used the serial or the transmitter ID of whatever of your radio to register that radio with the software on that computer. After you've done that, then that software on that computer can be used with any radio. So you don't need a PDN registration for each radio if you wanted to use one of several radios. Now, if you wanted to use two of them at a time, you would need two registrations. So that's how that works. And you need to remember which radio you use to do the registration, because if you want to install it on another computer, you will need that radio been a while since I've done it, so maybe somebody can clarificate if I get this wrong. But I think their system does not allow you to do two registrations with the same email address. I know. It's a manual system, but let me just check. Oh, yeah, I'll go ahead, Otis. Is that still the case? The email address is K90Q. Go ahead, Otis.
K90QW4OD. Let's see if I can help out here on this, Chris. I think with the six devices that I have registered, I think I've pretty much got it committed to memory, and apparently you've just informed me that even though I haven't commented on the Yaesu's Facebook pages, apparently I'm blocked. That's why I can't get to them, but I was actually in search of information, but hey, it's their page. But apparently I've stirred something up. But anyhow, when you go to register the device, and you're exactly correct, you don't have to register them all if you just want to use them one at a time. But if you want to use them more than one device at a time, you can use the same email address. All you need is another unique username. So keep track of your usernames. I use the same password and just change the username when I register the DHRI-200. I did the FT2D, the 3, the FTM100s, and the FTM300 and 400. So I have printed that off so I can keep score here at home as far as what username goes with what radio. And when they emailed me back, the room and node number for that device, I actually stapled it to it. That way we keep things straightened out. Everything didn't go wonky, so... Hopefully that helps clear that matter up. W4IOD, back to net control.
Okay, Odie, thanks for that information. Okay, that it used to be you needed a different email address, which, since I have my own email server, wasn't much of a problem. It was just annoying, so I'm glad they fixed that. Rick, does that answer your question?
Yes, Chris, I believe it does. So just one more follow-up, I guess, there for Odie. I assume then it's you can, of course, it asks for your call sign, of course. I assume he's using your call sign on both registrations, then it's not a problem either. Is that correct?
Yeah, go ahead, take it, Otis.
Rick, that is correct. It was not an issue. Like I said, when you register, just use a unique user ID for each device you're registering. Back to you.
Okay, Odie and Chris, thank you very much. Yes, that takes care of it. Thanks for the... clarification there. And thank you guys for being there. KD9GVS.
Okay, well, thanks for being there too. And we had the N1 UFO join that here. Oh, I just like that call sign. I'll have to look at that one. I think yours is. All right, that takes us to the bottom of the list. If you should have questions, comments, things we can help you with that are of a technical nature and mainly involve fusion, maybe, give me a call. It's K90Q.
Victor Alpha 3, Whiskey Mike, with a question.
Who the heck knows? BA3WM. Appears to be John, Ontario.
go ahead with your question. Good evening, Chris. It's John Victor Alpha 3, Whiskey Mike, in the Niagara region of Ontario. And you were talking about registrations. The repeater that I'm using at the moment was registered a while ago, and I think the location of the repeater base. Still there, Tom?
I give you another call there, Tom. Let's go around the A3WM A92. Okay, well, we'll wait for John to come on back. There is his repeater still connected.
Yes,
I went to N1 UFOs QRZ page, and he's got aliens and UFOs on the page, just like I hoped. There you go. I was hoping there'd be UFOs on that page. Now I'm happy. Now, WO1VES would have wolves on their page. Then life would be great. Well, let me take this moment, take a little break in the action to point you to hamoperator.com. And there's a few things I want to mention. We have the pictures of the week, which I will explain. They look like UFOs, maybe. I don't know. They don't look of this earth, but anyway, we'll talk about those. But on the main page, heard this week on the net, a couple things. So I haven't been very good at this, but I'm going to get better. So with the stuff that used to be on the main page, is moved over to the old news page. So that's where you want to go if you want to look for something that used to be up there, and where did it go? Like some links and things like that. So I've just got some stuff this week. I'm going to talk about the links here. For whatever reason, I've always been interested in underwater cables, partly because I don't know, because this is how we talk to VK5JP and others. And so I've got two links. One is a little bit about underwater cables. It's not, you know, there are better about pages. But the second link is what's really cool. It's a map of all the cables. I mean, you got to know where they are, right? You don't want to drag your anchor over them. I think John is back. We'll get right back with you, John. Anyway, that cable map is really cool. You can, click on the city where cables terminate. You can kind of hover over the cables to see how long they are and who owns them. And there's a lot of underwater cables. And the reason I discovered that was there is some evildoers that apparently went and cut some these cables in Egypt. They're not underwater all the time. And Egypt is one of those funny places where these undersea cables have to come out to make a long land for a bit. And of course, they're all bundled together in the same place. And so the guys took about hacking up the cables. And it was something like 30% of the world's internet went dead because of these cables in Egypt. So we are vulnerable. In the West here, I don't think we were aware of it, but there were countries that completely lost internet connection. So so I got the links up there. The cable map's kind of cool. Another thing I hadn't even thought about is, how do you know if your GPS is being jammed? Well, these guys put together a web page to tell you if you have GPS, you know, where in the world, if you look at the whole world, where GPS is being jammed. You might guess some of that is taking place in Ukraine. and you would be right. But how do they know the GPS is being jammed, like, anywhere in the world? And I mean, this is not the NSA or the CIA. These are some guys putting up this webpage. Well, they're smart guys. And it isn't everywhere in the world. It's mostly where airplanes fly. Turns out, if you receive the ADS-B transmissions from airplanes, there's an indication about how they are getting their location. Is it inertial? Is it GPS? Where is the location coming from? Well, when airplanes fly through an area where GPS is being jammed, guess what? Their GPS quits working, and they have to go to inertial navigation or some other form of navigation. So anyway, these rather smart guys just take the ADS-B data, and they look at all this stuff, and they look at the planes, and they look at where they are, and they look at other planes in the same area, and they use some algorithms to come to the conclusion whether GPS is being jammed or not in that area. Who knew? The last link I have there is a great site about antennas and other stuff, nonstop systems. Little Frank, and if you poke around in there, you will find lots of really good information. Click on Frank's homepage, and there's stuff on antennas and whatever. And I sent the email off to Frank, you know, just saying, hey, I really like your website. And, it's really a great guy. We ended up having a little conversation here, and so I'm happy to put that link up there. If you're interested in, he's got some projects up there. He's got a project up there I'm really very interested in. And his write-ups, hams typically don't like writing things down. Frank likes to write things down. The detail that he has and the projects that he has on there and the information he has on there is outstanding. So anyway, nice personal website there about antennas and stuff. I figured I had to throw something in there that was ham radio related. Let's see, gotta get back to the right page here. John, are you back with us? VA3WM from K9EQ.
K9EQ from VA3WM. Do you copy, Chris? Over.
Yes, sir, I do. We lost you. I forget what you were saying now, but why don't you go ahead with your question?
Okay, I'll try it again. The repeater I'm using now, VE3RNR RPT, shows on your screen as being in St. Catharines, which is the mailing address of our club when I registered it. How do I go about changing that to the physical location of the repeater? It's still the Niagara region, but not exactly in St. Catharines. Over.
Move the repeater to St. Catharines? No, that wouldn't be practical. You can take care of that by writing to Yaesu. On the Yaesu webpage up here. Basically, you want to send an email to probably their, on their webpage. They have a contact us, and they got the email addresses there, amateurtech@yaesu.com. That's the best place to send an email, and just let them know, give them the information, the room number, those number, that kind of thing, the serial number, like of the HRA 200, so that they know it's you, and tell them you'd like the city or whatever in that record you want changed. Just tell them what you'd like changed. And they should do it for you. It'll, plan on a week, because you send a letter to California, California sent a email to Japan, time differences, et cetera, and Japan ends up doing it. So, but they can do it. That's the only way that I'm aware of that you can get that done.
Okay, I can take it from there. I gather it's just a manual update in their database or whatever they use to keep track of this stuff. But I think what I'll do is I probably still have the email that assigned me the room and the note number, and I'm guessing all the information should be there. Okay, that's the end of that one. And now that I have you, a bouquet is coming your way. You have published on hamoperator.com how you stabilize Windows 7 running Wires X. And I'll tell you, I followed your directions. It is like a rock. I recycle the Wires X server every morning at 5 a.m. and I recycle the Windows 7 computer every Sunday morning at 5 a.m. So, and throughout the pandemic period, it's been a rock. I almost forgot how to remote to the machine to check on things. It's been that good. So, good job on hamoperator.com, Chris. A VA3WM.
Well, John, that's very kind of you. And others had input into that. Dewey He was one of them. And that was one of the rare things we put on the ham operator that a number of people had input to and checked to make sure everything was right. Anyway, things have changed a little bit since that was published. And you probably don't need to restart them. I mean, it doesn't hurt that you're restarting them. But I basically found that I pretty much never need to restart the OS. And I have for good luck the Wires X software gets restarted. For me, it would be early Monday morning, so it's all fresh for the net. As far as remotely accessing the computer, I would with Windows 7, if you're using RDP, I would only do that through VPN. I mean, that is how I access it. I'm using the RDP, but I have my internal networks only accessible through VPN. I don't have exposed ports on each of the computers. So if I want to fiddle with something inside my network from afar, I have a certificate-based VPN. If you're using something like Chrome and whatnot, it's probably not as serious an issue, but, I still kind of prefer accessing that kind of stuff through VPN. And anyway, my VPN runs on the original Raspberry Pi 1, and it's been doing that for years, and it works just great. Time for other thinkers. Anybody has a question, comment, observation, something like they'd like to bring up to the net, please call Net Control. This is K9EQ.
WB7OUT, Yuma, Arizona.
Charlie, Dan in Minnesota.
Okay, WB7OUT. Right, Tom in Yuma, Arizona. What do you have? And Dan, we just... okay, Dan, we got your call sign. I only heard the CC, but we got you, Dan. Tom, go ahead.
Yes, just sort of a comment. I yesterday had heard 10 meters was open, and I was beaconing on 29250 with my FT991A, and all of a sudden three calls popped up on the screen, and one of them was W4IOD, and I gave him a call, and he came right back to me. So that was my first 10-meter C4FM contact, and it worked out quite well, so I just wanted to thank Otis for that. Back to you.
You know, this is just the greatest. Well, very good, Tom, and thank you for coming in and mentioning that. And I see that the Yuma Ham Fest is the third full weekend in February, so is anybody going to be around Yuma? Third week, full weekend in February. You know, just go and look up Tom on QRZ. I know she don't mention you have a 991 on QRZ, but what that's like. Anyway, that's pretty good. And then over on the chat window, let me put the chat window here. We had Joel, K0OQL, mention that he uses his MT5 to monitor 29250. I guess he turns on the GM function. It's not going to transmit. It doesn't transmit on 10 meters, so you're not going to bother anybody. And why not? Yeah, sure, the FT5, the FT3, the FT2, the FT1 can all listen on 29.250. They just can't transmit on it. So if you've got a hankering to see what's going on there, you know, this figures gets you some kind of a 10-meter antenna plugged in. And Joel had a good suggestion there. Anyway, Tom, thanks for the comment. Otis doesn't make an FT1. We'll do it. We'll find out. Otis, do you have something?
Yeah, I don't want to tie the net up with a whole bunch of information, Chris, but just a comment on Tom and the 10-meter C4FM thing. It was good speaking with you, Tom, and we worked several stations over the weekend when the antenna wasn't iced over. We had some icy weather here Saturday, but I've worked all the way to Europe on that and all the way down to Chile. So for me here, it seems to be the 5,000 mile mark is where I'm getting my best. That seems to be it on the limits on my antenna. And there's some discussion on that as far as what's the best antenna to use. What works best for me is a Yagi or a cubicle quad. A lot of folks are using the ground mounted. But for folks that have never tried that, you do need an FT991A to transmit. I've had questions about other radios. No other radio is going to do it. Yaesu specifically designed that FT991A to do that. And if you're looking for one right now, good luck. They're out of stock. Searching the websites, I wasn't blocked today, Mr. Peterson. I was able to say that DX Engineering's estimated ship date on the FT991A is around December 26th of this year. So they are on back order. The other ones say out of stock. Ham radio outlet. I think I looked at R&L Electronics and Gigaparts. If you can pick one up new, I guess the way to do it is get on the waiting list if you're looking for one. And that is a really neat aspect of it. A lot of questions in regards to what it actually means. For the folks that don't know, the radio that you get, the manual in the box, that is not all the manuals. The other manuals are available at yaesu.com. Select your radio, go to the files tab, and you'll find the WiresX, the group monitor, and the general operating, along with any firmware updates. And it is important that you keep your radio firmware up to date. But some discussion in regards to that. Let me let it reset. W4IOD returning. There is a Facebook page over there that they haven't blocked me from yet, with a 10-meter group monitor. And a lot of folks over there are eager to learn, so I have invited some over to the net this evening to participate in if they have any questions or comments. And it was one of those things, as far as the questions of what it means when the call sign turns blue and what it means when it turns gray, and actually helping some of those folks out. Having a lot of fun with it, Chris, so I'll quit rambling on. If we have any particular questions, we'll do our best to answer them. Thanks for letting me reply to Tom, and I'm going to turn it right back to you. K9EQ, W4IOD, back to you.
Okay, well, very good, Odie. And we've had some updates, and that is we have confirmation that the ST2DR will not do the C4FM. That came from two sources, so it's got to be correct. You know, trust but verify. And anything that I say, you probably better verify. Anyway, I think we're going to... Next on the list is the contemplative photographer in southeast Minnesota. Dan, go ahead and take it. W9FCC from K9EQ.
Okay, Chris. Thank you, W9FCC. Oh, you looked up my website, eh? Well, thank you for that, too. Just a quick question. I've been pretty new to C4FM, the whole internet-connected ham radio thing going on here. Just a question. I noticed on a lot of call signs that I see, some of them have the call sign and their name, some of them don't have the name. I wonder if mine has my name on it, and if where does that name come from? How is that part of? Is that associated somehow with a hotspot, or how does this system work? Where does the name come when I see it pop up on some call signs? WNFCC.
Okay, very good, Dan. That's the song going on QRZ. Dan had a link to his personal webpage. And he seems to be a very contemplative person. He's not contemplating. He's doing photography, and he's a nerd and rides motorcycles. But maybe you contemplate on a motorcycle. I don't know. Never had a motorcycle, so I would know. But some really neat photography there. So very nice looking pictures there, Dan. It's not as, you know, we're getting other information here about the C4FM on 10 meters. Hold off on all the C4FM on the HTs on 10 meters stuff. We got to check this out more. Anyway, Dan, it's not as complicated as it may seem. Back when you got your radio set up, and you'll recall that you had to enter your call sign, and that's where you do it. You put in the call sign, and people put a slash or a dash, minus sign kind of a thing. Those two demarcations are legal FCC, and so you can put your name, so you could do like W9FCC slant Dan, and then that would be also your legal call sign identifier. Now you don't technically have to say your call sign to be legal, but you can put the Dan in there and still not have to say your call sign. It's limited to 10 characters. So I think everything will fit there. You know, if you have a like a 2x3 and a name like Gustav or something, they're pretty much out of luck. But there's pretty people get pretty good with the abbreviations, and you might not have enough characters for the whole name, but you can get something in there. So, Dan, does that answer your question for you?
Yes, it does. Thank you very much. I'll give that a try. I was just wondering where did it come from. So, all right, I can do it. It's right here in my radio, then. Thank you very much. That's all I need. W9FCC.
Okay, Dan, and thanks to the control operators here. We have other suggestions for names that are too long to put in there. We won't go into the details. That's the bottom of the list. I think I may take a segue here back over to, as we're coming up on 1 hour here, I'll go back over to hamoperator.com. We mentioned the links. And I've got two pictures up there. And this came as like a total surprise to me. What I was doing at the time, and my life is like this at times, what I was doing at the time was going, you know, I need to get this podcast thing going so that all these maps, many of them are recorded, get published, and people can listen to them some other time, right? And what I've been doing, because my station here has been in utter chaos for a long time now, I've just been using my FT5 to record the net. You know, it's got a record function that burns through the SD card nicely, because it's just a WAV file, 16,000 samples per second, 16 bits. So the picture on the left, that is basically the one that says capture, is a capture of a complete net. And if you click on the picture, you can enlarge it, take a little better look at it. You'll notice something odd about it, and that is the waveform isn't in the middle of the image. And so the way these digital things work, you have 16 bits, and so each combination of bits represents a y-axis on that screen, and zero being dead center in the middle. There's kind of a light line that's drawn right down the middle. That's where zero is. So you can go minus 32,700 something, or plus 32,700 something, and you can plot all 65,536 points. However, when you look at the aforementioned graph, that's not what you see. What you see is about the bottom fifth of the plot has nothing. Nothing there. Blank. Nada. No combinations of those bits in that in the negative range are used. Now, if we had a sine wave, what you would expect to see is a sine wave, the upper peak and the lower peak, the trough, would be equal and opposite around that center line. But that's not what you see here. You just see the thing cut off at the knees, down at the bottom. This was a graph of when Otis was doing that control, and Otis was healthfully modulated, and so you can see that it was his signal. He touched the top of the chart a lot of times there, but never at the bottom. And then where it isn't as robust, we'll say, that's probably me. So you can see that I do a lot of talking on this net. It's kind of embarrassing, actually. But I'm running a lower audio level, and my transmission looks more symmetrical than OD's. But there's more to the story. So if you go to the second picture, which is the capture with detail, what I've done is I've really zoomed in on a segment there. And you can kind of see that it was really hard to find a good spot here where Odie and somebody else was talking with lower modulation. But you can see the fairly heavy-duty modulation, but then to the left or to the right of center, mostly to the right, it looks more symmetrical. There's an odd thing going on to the left of center. But here's the other thing that is very odd. So you can see where the zero axis is, y equals zero, but look at where the waveform is. When there is no sound, it's displaced in the negative direction. So I am not sure what's going on here, but this is not what I expected to see. My guess is, what the radio is doing is it's capturing, for us to hear the sound, it's got to go into a digital to analog converter. 16-bit seems like a good choice. All the computers, why not? That I would think you just take the vocoder digital output and you feed it into a digital to analog converter, and there you go. And if we wanted to record it on an SD card, we would just take that stuff and we would stuff it on an SD card. So I'm assuming this is what the B to A is seeing. But there is definitely asymmetries and displacements in here that I was not expecting. And I guess in my mind it might account for some of the harshness of the audio when people have the mic game hooked too far. And I have noticed a different radio sound different. It seems like people sound better on the FT-991 than they do on the non-FT-991. So anyway, there you go. I just happened to notice that today. And so you can take a look at it, maybe with that explanation. And some people want to do some experimenting out there and investigate it. Hey, here's something you can do. Put the electronics to work. You got a oscilloscope you haven't used in a couple of years. Drag that thing out and play with it. Anyway, that's my bet for all the stuff that I have. So let's see if we have any more check-ins. People that might have questions, comments, observations for the net. And there was a comment here. Was it? Oh God, these guys are talking. Oh, yeah, Otis made a comment that it's good practice, even though you don't have to say your call sign, it's a good idea to say it anyway. So, you know, it's more social, and you know, and not everybody's in a position to see their call sign on the radio anyway. I'm just talking about the legal fulfillment for the FCC. Any more check-ins with the traffic? Call now, K9EQ.
K9EQ, this is K3FZT with a question and comment about ID.
Using a Blue Parrot Bluetooth headset, and it's going to suggest I put another quarter in the radio. Probably what I need to do. Anyway, it's easier to do that. Steve, A3FZT, self-proclaimed thinker, reader, listener, synthesizer, reflector, technologist, and retired emergency physician who is exploring ideas, connections, and things like that. Wow, that keeps you busy. Steven, go ahead.
So, Chris, there's a bunch of nets that people have put together, and that cross multiple digital modes, and some of which even include analog links. I won't name names, but I'm sure you know of their existence. On some of those nets, they permit logins by digital users by quick keying, which other digital users can receive the call sign, but the analog participants have not. How much of a problem do you think that might be? Steve in Philly, K3FZT.
You're thinking again. Gotta watch that, Steve. We've done that as an experiment before, or times. We occasionally take all check-ins. It used to be we would do that, all check-ins in the winter, and we would do the traffic only in the summer. And, quite frankly, it's a lot of work. I don't have the software necessarily set up to do the... you know, one of the things about the digital is nice is you can pretty much automate the check-in test, where you just sit there and somebody transmits their name and everything fills in on the sheet. That type of thing. Like I mentioned earlier, I could just click on something here and I've got the QRZ page without having to type a call sign in or anything like that. Well, you know, it just doesn't work for analog. So somebody on analog is going to hear a lot of ker-chunking and wish that they had a fusion radio. So I guess I don't see a problem with that. I mean, it does, you know, the nets that have a lot of the cross modes. And that encourage a lot of the cross-modes. I don't, they're more problematic. I mean, it is more complicated. And they tend to be more problematic. So at MinWiz, we have kind of a strong emphasis on reliability. And some of that stuff is just not consistent with keeping things reliable. And even with what we have, sometimes. Challenge trying to figure out what the heck happened and why he did it. I don't think it's a problem. I guess enough of that. Although I just since you're a retired emergency physician exploring ideas, you're gonna regret ever writing that down. I have a question for you. I've always wondered about this. So I've been in hospital professionally and unprofessionally, and I've always been impressed at how critical communications are in a hospital. In other words, their phones. If they lose, you know, if that phone system goes down, it's a world of hurt. And, resetting there. It's a world of hurt, and I wonder if you have any observations on that, having been in that environment and dependent upon that phone system. Go ahead, Steve.
Oh my. Observations. Well, I guess the first observation I would offer is that when I took over an ER in Brooklyn in 1995, after making the billing system work so that I could get the cash in to pay the doctors for their work, and then recruiting doctors, the next thing I tackled was the phone system. And I could tell you stories about the yin-yang, but you've nailed it. It is a critical issue. It is heavily a people issue as well. And some of my later efforts got lost in the roll-up of multiple phone service companies that provided all kinds of services inside the PBX. But you're right on. It's a problem. Newer, all digital systems now, the same hospital much more recently has put in an all digital system, and it has twinned it so that if one digital switch goes down, the digital switch at the other end of the campus can handle the whole thing. Or at least that was the situation 4 years ago when I left. K3FZT.
Cool. I found the guy that knows about this stuff. No, I just, it always impressed me. I mean, I work in the medical business, pacemakers and stuff like that. And it just seemed to me that if that phone system quit working, people could die. You know, it's not an optional service. It's as important as any, any machine or anything that you might use in the operating theater. So that's interesting with the digital. I hadn't thought about that, being able to do that backup. Well, I think it's getting down to about the end of the list here. So let me see if we have anybody else. I don't think. Oh, I just point out too, and those of you at hamoperator.com probably noticed it, I do try to maintain a list of nets that you can check in. The Kansas City wide group started a new international net that's on the calendar. They have like 20 or 30 nets a week. I don't list them all. I'm trying to list nets that are just active and potentially interesting, and some of them might be not operating anymore, or there might be nets I'm missing. If there are, let me know. There's a contact thing, or you can get at me to the usual places on the like to keep that calendar up to date. Any other check-ins for the net before we close? This is K9EQ.
WB7OUT with one comment.
Okay, Tom, you get to put the ribbons on it. Go ahead with your comment.
I heard you mention the Yuma Ham Fest, and I just want to let everyone know that that is not going to occur this year. Go to our website, yumahamfest.com or org. There's an explanation there of why not. So we don't want people showing up and wondering what happened to the Ham Fest. There will not be one. That's all I have, WB7OUT.
Okay, very good, Tom. So they should just go to your house then? Anyway, thanks for that. I didn't click on the link to see anything about that. Anyway, I'd like to thank everybody for checking in, listening to the Bakken Amateur Radio Society Fusion Radio Net. To let people disconnect, because it's really hard to disconnect if the repeater is transmitting. We request that the folks stand by for about a minute and let the rooms disconnect before you transmit. Anyway, 7-3 all, thank you to the net control stations, Pete and Otis and me, I guess. And we'll do this again next week. 7-3 all. This is Chris, K9EQ, Escondido, just north of San Diego, 73.